What I want to look at today is, what is the global picture of Rabban Gamliel's Seder, and how does that relate to his understanding that everybody has to discuss these three things at the Seder? So once, in other words, besides for Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, what else was Rabban Gamliel doing at his Seder? And how is that different from what we might be doing at our Seder? So we have this statement in the Tosefta, again, the parallel to the Mishnah, in terms of timeline of rabbinic texts, so very old rabbinic texts. Chayav adam la'asok bihilchot ha-Pesach kol ha-layla. A person must is obligated to engage in hilchot ha-Pesach, in the laws of Pesach, all night long. And then we have a story of Rabban Gamliel, Ma'aseh b'Rabban Gamliel v'zikenim. So Rabban Gamliel and the sages, unnamed sages, Shayu misubin, that were having their su'uda, they were reclining, but misubin, sort of like a synonym for just eating, b'beit baitus benzunin belod, in a particularly well-off person in the community named baitus benzunin, we see him in other stories, in the town of Lod. Vayu asukim b'hilchot ha-Pesach kol ha-layla ad krod ha-geber. Actually, the plot sounds very similar to the story that we'll look at in a second that we have in our Agadah. It's Rabban Gamliel and some other sages. We don't know how many, but a number of sages, right? At least three, Rabban Gamliel and the Zakenim, so there's plural. So at least three sages, probably more, were having their meal in a particular house in Lod. We know that our story takes place in Bnei Brak, but this is in Lod. And they were spending all night going over the laws of Pesach until it was dawn, until the cock crowed in the morning. So that's when they took away the plates from in front of them, and they got up, and they Valchula and the Beit HaMidrash, and they went to the house of study, presumably to do more prayers and studying about the laws of Pesach. So when you sort of see, what does Rabban Gamliel's Seder look like? Well, presumably he's also speaking about Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, but fundamentally what he's spending his time doing is discussing the laws of Pesach at night, okay? So that's sort of the vision of what you're supposed to do on Seder night. You're supposed to la'asok b'hilchot ha-Pesach. You're supposed to engage in the laws of Pesach itself. That is, interestingly, not how our Seder ended up looking. We have another text that's in a similar line as Rabban Gamliel's approach to what he was doing all night. Notice, he's not the one who says you're obligated to do it, but he's the model of what it looks like to do this, of engaging in the laws of Pesach all night. We have another midrash, again from Mechilta, old rabbinic text, the midrashim on the book of Shmod. Mahaidod v'achukim v'amishpatim, right? This is the verse that's put into the mouth of the wise son. What are the laws and the statutes and the ordinances, right, that are commanded to us? And then we get a midrash on that, which says, Rabbi Eliezer said, what is the scriptural proof, minayin ataomer, that if one is in a group of sages or students, that one must study the laws of Pesach, la'asok behilchot Pesach ad chatzot? For Rabbi Eliezer, he had a time limit on chatzot, on midnight, for getting everything done on Seder night. But that's sort of corresponding to the all night long, like as far as he was willing to go in terms of how long you can last your Seder. So so he's using this verse as the proof of that. Ma'aidot b'chukim, that the questioning around the laws is Rabbi Eliezer's proof that you're supposed to spend all night la'asok b'hilchot ha-Pesach, talking about the laws of Pesach. Which again is not really how we end up spending our Seder night, right? We do have that that moment where the wise child asks this question, and at least in our Haggadah, the response is you instruct him in the laws of Pesach, including the law about Afikoman. But that's sort of like a side detail. It's like a story about somebody. It's not actually us. We do not engage in the laws of Pesach on Seder night, even though it seems like at least at some point that was the ideal. The ideal was to spend the night engaging in the laws of Pesach. So what is our version of the all night? It's actually not about the laws, but it's about the story. And we have here this this lovely statement that we read in our Haggadah, Afilu kulanu chachamim, Kulanu Nivonim, Kulanu Zekenim, Kulanu Yodim and Atara. This is actually a mashup of two versions of the original, which seem to have fewer numbers of these groups. But let's put them all together, right? Even if all of us were sages, even if all of us were knowledgeable and wise, even if all of us were elders, in the Zakein here doesn't just mean old age, but really means a Zakein like a like the elders in with Moshe in the desert. That is to say, the council of elders. Even if all of us were elders, i.e., wisdom elders, even if we all knew the Torah, mitzvah aleinu, not la'asof bihilchot haPesach, which you could imagine, it's not that the mitzvah is not about engaging in the laws of Pesach per se, but rather l'saper b'yitziat Mitzrayim. Rather, the mitzvah, the recommendation is for us to tell the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. V'chol amar b'lisaper b'yitziat Mitzrayim arayz mishbach, and whoever increases in telling the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim, they are praiseworthy. So you can see here, coming out of nowhere, it's like, yeah, Seder, you tell the story of the going out of Egypt. But in contrast to what we saw with Rabbi Eliezer and Rabban Gamliel's story in terms of what they were doing, it's not just that telling the story of going out of Egypt stands on its own, but it stands in contrast to this other vision in which you would spend all night learning the laws of Pesach and speaking about the laws of Pesach. And that seems so, you know, it's possible. I mean, although the original statement says Chayav Adam, everybody has to lasok b'hilchot haPesach, everybody has to engage in the laws of Pesach. It seems to me like there might be more of a sort of broader applicability for telling the story of going out of Egypt than there is to engage in the laws of Pesach all night long. In other words, engaging in the laws of Pesach might be something that, yeah, the sages, Rabban Gamliel, the other Chachamim, the other elders, they're engaging in that elite activity of going over the laws of Pesach. Everybody else, you know what you get? You get Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, right? Let's just keep it simple for everybody else. You ask your three questions. I'll give you three answers. We're looking at the food that is, you know, in front of us on the table. And that's fundamentally going to be the sort of plebeian version of the Seder. And if you're an elite, then you can engage in Hilchot HaPesach and sort of imagine a divided world here. Indeed, the story that we have, this is again now in contrast to the story of Rabban Gamliel, let's just look at the story that we have. Maaseh b'Rebbe Eliezer. Here we get the sages who are named. Rebbe Eliezer, who himself we just read, had that statement about we have to engage in the laws of Pesach. Rebbe Yehoshua, Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, Rebbe Akiva, and Rebbe Tarfo. Notice who's not listed here, right? Rabban Gamliel is not among the sages who are listed among the five sages. Shayu Misubin b'Bnei Brak. They were reclining not in Lod, which actually the place of Rebbe Eliezer, but rather in Bnei Brak, which is the place of Rebbe Akiva. Vayu Misaprim b'Yitziat Mitzrayim Kol Otol Alayla. Now instead of Lasok b'Hilchot HaPesach, now instead of engaging in the laws of Pesach, rather they were speaking about going, they were telling the story of going out of Egypt all night long until their students came to them and said, our rabbis, it's time to say Kriyat Shema in the morning, i.e. it's the dawn. So you have, the plot elements are the same. You have a group of rabbis, they're doing something all night long, they finish at dawn, but the location is different and the content is different, right? They're spending their time telling the story of going out of Egypt as opposed to engaging in the laws. And notice, not only is Rabban Gamliel missing, but who's the center rabbi? We've seen in ancient texts that the center is really often the you know, the most important element. The center rabbi is actually not the oldest rabbi in the list. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua are the old generation. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Tarfon are the next generation down. And what's strange is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is in the middle, which is sort of the position of honor in any of the lists of rabbis. Again, in the story of Rabban Gamliel, only Rabban Gamliel was named. So he was sort of in the position of honor, and then some other unnamed sages. Here, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, he's in the middle. And who is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah compared to Rabban Gamliel? He is the one, when Rabban Gamliel is deposed from running the Beit Midrash, and is sort of unable to open the Beit Midrash to a wider group of people, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is the one who steps in instead of Rabban Gamliel and opens up the floodgates for people entering the Beit Midrash. So there might be, again, this is not explicit, but if you're just sort of reading into the names that are here, it's not only that Rabban Gamliel's approach to the Seder of learning the halachot is not present, but there's sort of like the inverse of Rabban Gamliel shows up. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who is the replacement of Rabban Gamliel when Rabban Gamliel gets deposed from running the Beit Midrash because of his fight with Rabbi Yehoshua. This is in the story in the fourth chapter of Masechet Brachot. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is the one who also opens the gates of the Beit Midrash, and many, many benches are filled with students. And so there is some sort of a whiff of democratization that happens in this story, where instead of having the focus on the elite activity of learning the laws of Pesach, you're moving to a broader activity about telling the story of going out of Mitzrayim. And just to say that this is also something that Rabban Gamliel, we know from his use of liturgy elsewhere, is in contrast to other people's approach of what you should be doing. So for instance, right, again, if you look at the Haggadah as a liturgy, right, Manishana is something that you must say, and the Pesach Matzah and Maror is a liturgy that is a response to the required questions that you must say. That's a scripted thing that you're supposed to do at night. That's not a free-for-all spontaneous discussion. That is a liturgy, right? Manishana is structured as a liturgy. Repeated words and a certain meter. I'm arguing related to Rabban Gamliel's set of responses. And so all wrapped up in the, what is the thing that we're all supposed to do at a minimum? Rabban Gamliel is also the one who says the same kind of thing for the Amidah. Rabban Gamliel says every single day, every person should say 18 brachot, right? The Shmona Esrei, the 18 blessings of the Amidah. Maybe you studied with that last year. Rabbi Yehoshua says, no, you could say the essence of the 18 blessings. But notice Rabbi Eliezer says, if you set your tefillah as keva, if you set your tefillah, your amida as fixed, then your tefillah is not tachronim, then you don't have supplication. So here again, we have another situation in which you have a scripted version of prayer and you have a spontaneous version of prayer. Rabban Gamliel is coming down on the scripted version of prayer, which is available to everybody, at least at a minimum standard. But Rabbi Eliezer is saying, yeah, if all you did is the script, you're not really getting to the spontaneous part, which is maybe the essence of what it means to have a prayer experience. And if you apply that over to our Seder night, Rabbi Gamliel might be saying, yeah, everybody has a script. Ask three questions, get three answers. Then you can move on to the praising and the food. Whereas, the move towards telling the story, you know, elites can spend their time doing more, according to Rabbi Gamliel, around Hilchot HaPesach, but everybody else is sort of left just with the script. And then we move to a world in which we're telling the story and more people get to participate and engage in that activity. So this is sort of a broader view of what might be standing behind Rabban Gamliel's approach to the three questions with the three answers, and how we might be able to really relish in telling the story as a development moving away from an elite activity to something that includes us all.